Good evening. My name is Paula Eat, Mayor of Kingborough, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to tonight's meeting on Monday the 19th of February 2024. Could I extend a warm welcome to the members of the community who are in the public gallery this evening? It's lovely to have you here, and also to those people who are watching along at home on YouTube. It's 5:30pm and so I officially declare this meeting open. I wish to advise the council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website, and in accordance with council's policy, I'll ask the acting general manager to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Confirm, ma'am.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Eat, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Richardson. For our staff this evening, we have the Acting General Manager, Mr Arnold, the Director of People and Finance, Mr Spinks, the Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Shikuti, the Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, our Manager of Legal and Property, Mr Basham, our Legal Officer, Mr Rosen, who is attending his first meeting. Welcome this evening. Our Media and Communications Advisor, Ms Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. And we have apologies from Councillor Street, who of course did welcome his first son into the world last Tuesday evening, which is very exciting. So on behalf of everyone here on Council, if he does happen to be watching along at home, which I think is highly unlikely, congratulations. We're on page one now, confirmation of minutes, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 2 held on the 5th of February 2024 be confirmed as a true record. I'm looking for a mover. I've got it in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Gladewright. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Still on page one, workshops held since the last Council meeting. We had a workshop on the 13th of February in relation to the budget where we discussed the draft long-term financial plan. Page two, declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they wish to declare? Thank you. Still on page two, transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor wishes to transfer from closed into open session or open into closed session? No? Thank you. Brings us to questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question? Thank you. If you could come to the lectern, yes, and press the button, you know the drill. And well, even though we know who you are, could you please state your name and the suburb that you reside on in?
Julian Bush. I have property on Bruny and I reside in South Hobart.
Thank you.
I've got, by way of preamble, sorry, Mayor and Councillors, I hope you will bear with my preamble. Several years ago, I was fined by Council for parking. This solely on the evidence of a photograph handed to Council by an independent landowner. I have discussed this on quite a few occasions years back with the General Manager. He doesn't recall it, and we will have to look into whether this is kosher or not. But if you would bear with me, go on, that's how it happened. The photo was taken by a surveillance camera focusing on the street, and the adjoining property enabled comings and goings to be recorded. Was this photo a fake? Who knows? But I eventually paid the fine after considerable legal expense and discussions with the General Manager, who seemed on that occasion to be both judge and jury on the veracity, legality, not to mention the morality of this method of collection of evidence. In today's climate of artificial intelligence, social media shenanigans and the like, I can foresee increasing problems. In this regard, I come to my questions. Drones. Does Council own or operate any drones or other RPAs?
I'll ask the General Manager to address that. Sorry, I have to say Acting General Manager, and I'll just explain that. As you're aware, we extended the General Manager's contract for 2 months until his replacement starts in April. So under the Local Government Act, I've had to appoint him as the Acting General Manager for that 2 months. So just to provide some clarity as to why his title has suddenly changed. Acting okay. General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Thank you for the question, Mr Bush. Council does on occasion utilise drone technology. generally through our communications and media advisor who has access to a drone to utilise such for council events on council land.
Okay, thank you. And then going on, my second question would be, are there any council guidelines for their use and operation by council staff and or others, outside contractors, including the use of film and photographic imagery? And would it be appropriate for a formulation of some policy if you do not have such?
The Acting General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Good question, Mr. Bush. The Local Government Association of Tasmania are currently undertaking on behalf of their sector across the state work in that space to develop a sector-wide response to the utilisation of drone technology.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anyone else have any questions? No? Thank you. That takes us to questions on notice from the public. There was one from Ms. Landon in relation to the Tasmanian Planning Commission's assessment of draft amendment PSA 2022-3 with a response from Mr. Stander. Brings us to questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor have a question? I've got Councillor Fox and then Councillor Antoli. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is relating to underground power, and the first part of the question is, what are Council's policies for providing underground power on road upgrades or requiring developers to provide underground power? My comment is, there are benefits of underground power. It's a one-off cost. It's a fire safety issue that I have concerned about. And also it eliminates the vegetation clearance around power lines, and it also means less maintenance, and it provides communities with more resilience and less outages. And my question, the second part of my question is Council aware that mainland states already mandate underground power lines, according to my information at the local government conference in Devonport? Thank you.
Thank you. I understand Ms. Tyler Moore can assist us with that.
Through you, Mayor, I can't provide the response about when we are upgrading our roads because it's not my area to answer on. With respect to new development and subdivisions, it is a standard condition we have about putting the power to the properties underground. It's not specified in the planning scheme. I believe it's mentioned in the Tasmanian Standard drawings. An example of one that does have that, the Huntingfield housing estate, will be underground. There are limitations with the very high voltage power lines. My understanding from power companies is that they can't go underground. It's acknowledged the benefits of having them underground for amenity reasons in terms of the appearance of them and trees being unusually shaped to accommodate them, but also if you're retrospectively putting it into an area that's treed, consideration needs to be given to trenching and what impact that might have on existing road reservation vegetation or other vegetation. And yes, I am aware that other jurisdictions around the country have that underground requirement and experience in it with Victoria. And yes, there are benefits, and it's certainly something we would encourage where it's appropriate.
Thank you very much. Next, I had Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I also have a question about drones. It must be the topic of the week. Over the weekend, there was a lot of talk in the socials about drone activity around Kingborough, and I got a call on Saturday from a constituent whose property was under surveillance for a drone, and he was having a contentious DA issue with council and wanted to know whether or not council undertakes surveillance for any reason, compliance or otherwise, or do we retain the services of those who do with drones?
The Acting General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Antoli, council does not undertake surveillance activities utilising drone technology. We're acutely aware of the Police Powers Surveillance Devices Act of 2006, which doesn't extend to local government, so that's not within our realm. I have been in discussion with council officers today about whether there was any utilisation of drone technology over the past weekend, and I can confirm that that was not the case. And just to put on the public record, the occasions where we utilise drone technology and have in the past, I've already, in answering Mr. Bush, said that events on council land, for example, for publicity purposes, we have from time to time utilised drone technology via contractors for weed spraying of council road reserves. We have utilised drone technology for stormwater inspections, and we have on some occasions utilised drone technology with the approval of private landowners. But other than that, the answer to your question is we do not use them for surveillance.
Thank you, General Manager. I'll pass that on. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Further to that, I'm just interested in the LGAT developing a sector-wide response to the use of drones. And my question really is Kingborough Council providing input into that sector-wide response? For example, is Kingborough going to recommend that software providing facial recognition technology be banned, as has been done throughout Europe and many cities in the United States?
Acting General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, council officers are certainly involved in those discussions. The most relevant officer is Mr. Fred Malt, who has been in regular contact with the Local Government Association of Tasmania. In terms of your reference to facial recognition, I'm sure that that's something that the Local Government Association are turning their mind to. And that will, once their work is completed, result in a report to this council.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions from me. The first one regarding the Margate to Huntingfield shared pathway. Every time I'm out in the community, I get asked about that, and even tonight, actually. So I'm wondering, any updates, understanding we're in an interesting election time at the moment, so there's probably no movement, but do we have any other updates around it?
No. So unfortunately, this is something that seems to have stalled quite some time ago in the Office of the Minister for Infrastructure. So you may be aware that the report was released for public comment, and then it, my understanding is that the Department of State Growth had concluded their summary of the consultation, and it was sitting in the Minister's office on numerous times, occasions in the past 6 months or so. I've inquired as to where it's at, and I've just been told the Minister is considering it. I think the thing that concerns me is that the Minister's now been considering it for about 9 months, but also my last letter, it was made very clear that there was no funding allocation for it in the current forward estimates. So I think perhaps now is an opportune time to remind not only the state government at the moment, but also other potential candidates, that this is something that the community would be very keen to see, and there's been a lot of work gone into that study and community engagement, and we would like to see this come to fruition in the future. So it would be wonderful if all parties would support this as an election initiative for Kingborough.
Great, thank you. Hear, hear. A question regarding the Kingborough Community Forum. Have we asked the forum members for their budget submissions? I recall last year some of them didn't receive an inquiry regarding that. I'm just wondering where we're up to with that.
Acting General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, my understanding, Councillor Midgley, is that we did ask the forum members for their submissions in the lead up to the budget workshop.
Great, thank you. And my final question, Mayor, I'm not sure if you've heard about how the Kingborough Bake Off went on the weekend.
I haven't, because unfortunately I had another commitment which rather bizarrely involved me riding on the back of a Harley Davidson motorbike for 100 kilometres whilst raising funds for Cystic Fibrosis Tasmania. So now that I've recovered from that, which was actually really good, Councillor Gladewright was actually representing me at the Bake Off, so might be able to No. Oh, you did. Sorry. I beg your pardon. Oh, you did. I thought Councillor Gladright did. I beg your pardon. Well, perhaps you can tell me how it... You've just asked
yourself. Dorothy Dixer. You've actually asked a question.
You've actually just asked yourself a Dorothy Dixer.
I have to say it in a question. Can I say that it was a fantastic event?
Please tell me how it went.
I'd just like to say that it was a fantastic event, and it was well attended by the community. So many people baking cakes, and I had just such great messages from community members thanking that Council put on such a wonderful, inclusive event to celebrate Pride Week. So thank you, Mayor. Sorry, I should have let you know I was asking that question.
Thank you. Well, I was very sorry that I couldn't be there, and I hope that I can be. I hope it's something that we repeat and I can be there next year, because as we all know, I like to bake. So I would have actually baked this year if I had an opportunity. So next year, I think you can expect a cake from me to appear. Any further questions? Councillor Fox and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. A former professional media person asked me an interesting question, that council meetings are on YouTube and Facebook, and he wondered whether we as councillors need to sign a release for that to happen, for our images to be put on social media, and whether I'd ever signed anything to that effect. And I don't think I have.
The Acting General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Fox, I'm not aware that that is a requirement, but I will look into it now that you've raised it. Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question about the Margate Main Street Master Plan engagement. How is it going in terms of are we getting a good response rate to that? It might be too early to say, but I note that it closes on the 12th of March, and I'm just interested to see if it's getting a lot of engagement so far, that survey on the website.
We don't have anybody that can speak to that because we don't have Mr. Reeve here this evening, and Ms. Adams is sitting, who's running that, is doesn't have a microphone available to her and is making sure that this is streamed appropriately. So we can take that one on notice and provide an update to councillors via email in the coming days, if you like.
Thank you.
Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Just two quick progress So updates. I note that Mr. Reeve isn't in the room, so this might be tricky, just in relation to a couple of projects that constituents have raised with me that are in Taroona in regards to the Kelvedon soccer ground upgrades, which seems to have hit a number of hurdles, if there's a completion date on that, as well as the Taroona foreshore toilet upgrades. So maybe that goes unnoticed.
Yes, we do. They're actually both for Mr. Smee, not Mr. Reeve, but he's not here either. Yeah. So we'll take those on notice. I know that the toilet is progressing because I saw some photographs the other day of that, but we'll get some further information and get it circulated for the information of all councillors. No further questions. That means that the open session of... Questions on notice from councillors at the time the agenda was compiled. There were no questions on notice from councillors, which means that the open session of council now adjourns and planning authority commences at 5:48pm. We are on page 4. It's the development application for oyster farming and processing, resource development and resource processing, including retrospective approval for infrastructure and works, stormwater and power, concrete washdown, driveway and dock areas at 110 Benbows Road, Oyster Cove, and Crown Lease Agreement 132402 with a recommendation on page 39. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. We are considering an application for retrospective approval for infrastructure and works associated with oyster farming and processing in Oyster Cove. This has been a very tricky one for me. I think this particular application really highlights the difficulty that we councillors have in assessing these applications, especially since the ones that come to us are the ones that are accompanied with lots of representations. This particular one has had 42 opposing representations and a further 3 that were in support. So on the one hand, I very much support small local business. It was just this morning that I was at the launch of the Taste of the Huon, and we heard from
the various stall holders, and I'm really proud of the high quality gourmet products that we boast here in our municipality. And I understand that the Bruny Island Oyster Company attract many, many visitors to Bruny Island and this area. On the other hand, though, I think we also must consider the impacts of this development on the Puttalina Reserve. The whole purpose of allocating land use as a natural reserve is for people to enjoy a return to the natural environment away from a commercial environment. And it is also very much worth noting that Puttalina is an important and significant historic and cultural site for the Tasmanian Aboriginal community. And preserving the peace and tranquility for which this area is renowned is really important. So this is a really hard one for me. And the question that I have is why there is a small patch of rural resource zone amongst a larger area of coastal reserve in the first place. This tension between an ability to run a commercial operation and the ability to enjoy a nature reserve in peace has arisen out of a decision as to which zones would be where. And I consider this to be at the heart of this problem that we're facing now, and one which now, as councillors, we have no control over. Technically, this application can meet the requirements of the scheme, and we are bound to approve this. So I will be supporting this application, but I haven't taken that decision lightly. And I do find some comfort in the condition which is included on the permit that a review of the noise be conducted within 6 months by a suitably qualified acoustic consultant. And I also note too that this afternoon we received an email from the applicant who said, and I quote, "I want to emphasise that my vision for my oyster farm is one of low impact, owner-operated sustainability. I aim to provide for my family while preserving the natural environment and contributing positively to the community." So I hope that this will be the case and that the operations can coexist with the users of the Puttalina Reserve and the surrounding coastal reserve. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. And yes, thank you also to the Deputy Mayor for setting the scene. I'd like to start by acknowledging the number of submissions that have been, or representations that have been put in for this proposal. And I also note the extensive report and the extensive conditions that are attached to the original motion. At the outset of my contribution, I'm foreshadowing an alternative motion should this one not get up. And I'm happy to take us through that alternative motion later on. Am I correct, Mayor, just a procedural question, that should this proposal fail, by the fact that I've now foreshadowed this alternative motion, if this motion fails, then we'll just go to... basically, my motion is the opposite, that this proposal should be rejected.
Correct.
Yep, thank you. So to continue my contribution, look, I think that the issues on which I believe that this proposal should in fact be rejected are non-compliance with the performance criteria within clause 26.3.3, discretionary use, in particular concerning the conflicting with or fettering agricultural land. So we've had it raised with us that there is grazing going on at other adjoining properties, which this proposal would interfere with. My second reason for considering this proposal to be non-compliant with the planning scheme is in regards to the road accesses and the fact that this would increase traffic movements, annual daily traffic movements by more than 10%. I'd also note that there's been no traffic impact statement or written advice from the road authority, but there are certainly representations that are raising this issue about traffic. I'd also reject this proposal based on non-compliance with performance criteria clause E10.7.1, buildings and works, in particular the impact on trees. Now, there's two trees on this property that, whilst it says clearly in the report that they are dead or dying, they are in fact classified as very high conservation value trees because of the hollows and the opportunity for wildlife. Therefore,
this proposal is non-compliant with that. I think alternatives haven't really been considered. And then finally, my reasoning for asking us as a planning authority to reject this based on its non-compliance with the planning scheme relates to Clause E11.7.1 Waterway and Coastal Protection Code, A4 Part C, in particular the potential for significant adverse impact on natural values from the stormwater discharge point discharging pollutants into the waterway. Now that I've got through my reasons for why I think that this proposal is non-compliant with the planning scheme, I want to turn our attention to the issues that are raised with the with some of the representations. Now, I think it is important at the outset, and this is why I thank the Deputy Mayor for raising it, that small business is really important to Kingborough. It's not really a matter for... employment is really important for Kingborough. Having really good livable communities is important to Kingborough, but as the Deputy Mayor pointed out, it behoves us to comply with the provisions laid out in the planning scheme, and we as a planning authority really have to take into account what those provisions are, which means that even though one of the representations raised did talk about the employment and the significance of employment and small business to communities, as it says on page 37 through 39, it says that that's not actually a loss of employment opportunity. So I'm looking at section 13 on page 38, issue loss of employment opportunities for Bruny Island, and then the one above that is loss of property values on adjacent properties. This is not a relevant matter for the planning authority to consider under the planning scheme development standards. So any move to relocate a significant portion of this employment from Bruny Island would disadvantage the workforce on Bruny. That's the issue that's been raised by one of the representations, and the response there in the report is that it's not a relevant matter for the planning authority to consider under the planning scheme development standards. So what I've raised tonight are the four issues of non-compliance, being the traffic issue, the tree issue, the stormwater discharge issue, and also the interference with agricultural use issue. So those are four areas where this falls foul of the planning scheme and therefore is non-compliant. When it comes to whether we should support small business or how we encourage employment opportunities in our communities, these are really valuable and important conversations to have, but they are of no relevance to the deliberations about this development application. I look forward to hearing other councillors' contributions, but I'll conclude my remarks by saying I really do hope that we... Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. My question is aimed at possibly an expert on the various non-conformances that Councillor Cordova brought up. Can we get a response to that list so we can verify whether or not what he is stating is a non-conformance?
Ms. Tyler-Moore. Thank you.
Through you, Mayor, the responses to those particular clauses is already included in the agenda and is written there in full about what the assessment was against the performance criteria.
Councillor Antoli.
Just clarification.
Sorry. Just on clarification, does that mean you believe it has been fully addressed and therefore it is actually compliant, not a non-conformance? Is that what you mean?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, the assessment's been undertaken by a number of internal departments as well as planners, and it's considered that it does comply with the planning scheme.
Okay, so based on expert advice, those allegations or assertions appear to be incorrect then. Thank you for clarifying.
Any further contributions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I echo the sentiments of the Deputy Mayor in regards to this one, that there are many, many positives, and we're not looking at this from a business perspective. We're sitting as a planning authority, and it is, again, listening to expert advice, people who are qualified and skilled in planning matters, reading the responses from the community and taking all that into account. It is a rural area. I know I live semi-rural, and even when the noise of someone living next door with a dog that barks at 5 a.m, it changes the nature of where you live and that local amenity. And that, I think, is discretionary when you're looking as a planning authority and assessing against a planning scheme and people who live there. You've got to weigh all of these up in regards to noise. The noise that has been stated
in the report, it is early on a still day, on a still morning at that time, and in the afternoon, I'm sure the local residences will notice there is something different. There is a new, there's different noises to that rural aspect. And we're talking, if you've been to this location, like it's a rural part of Kingborough. People go there for the peace and tranquility, and they've lived there for a long time living with that. And these noises can actually be quite disturbing. And as sometimes I have some elderly neighbours, and they get very disturbed by the noise, and in some instances have to move out because of the change in the nature of where they live. So I think it's important to take that into account as well. Some of the representations that were put forward, I feel like I am going to vote against it because of these as well. In regards to page 29, where it states, you know, Oyster Cove is zoned rural residential and environmental management. The proponents' activities are incompatible with the existing amenity and environment in Oyster Cove, given the industrial nature of what is proposed. There will be noise, construction, land clearing, runoff and other impacts, including degradation of the visual environment and a direct conflict with the Indigenous significance of Oyster Cove, given the proponents of properties directly and virtually adjoins Puttalina. A lot of the representations that are stated with the same thematic response around that really makes me think that this is not the right location for this development and this business. And I'm sorry to say that because I do support small business happening in Kingborough, but I just don't think it is the right space. I don't have the points and the bits of where it matches to in the planning scheme and the report, but for these statements that have been made in the representations, I can't support it. As it says, that underline that, Oyster Cove is no place for an industrial operation of this nature. And that's why I'll be voting against it.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate the comments that have been made around the table, but I guess I'm looking at the fact that this is a retrospective approval for what has been happening in this area for a long time. And it's also, at the same time, an intensification of use. But I do think a lot of the concerns that were probably there all the time are now being professionally addressed, things like the drainage, the hard stand, the protection of the trees that are left. And I guess from a planning point of view, it's an existing use, even though this is retrospective. I have had complaints over the years about this use, but not to the point where the council has put their foot down and said these people must cease. So I'm tending towards supporting the motion that's been presented by our staff, because I think it's an improvement to the existing situation. I don't think they're going to go away, and I think the concerns have been addressed and will be monitored on an ongoing basis, and everybody's more aware of what they can and can't do on this property. So I'll be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Further comments? Councillor Dean.
Thanks, Mayor. Look, just to make the comment that we've heard a few oppositional statements in terms of why they believe this DA shouldn't be approved, but as Councillor Antolis pointed out, it's quite clear that there's been extensive work done by our planning department, and to enable the business to operate and to make sure that it complies with our planning scheme is, at the end of the day, what we're adjudicating here, not loss of property value or not loss of employment opportunities or not traffic. We are very much have to decide on what's before us, and so in that respect, as a member of our planning authority, I will be approving it.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Further discussion?
Yes, over here.
Councillor Antolis.
Thank you. I have a contribution, whereas before I just had questions, sure. If that's all right. I'll make it brief. There was a large list of representatives not in favour, and I think council officers have done an excellent job in responding to them according to the planning scheme. It is so frustrating when you're a member of the community and you have what you feel is a very legitimate question, and then you find out that it's not relevant to the planning scheme. You get upset because it's legitimate to you, but it's not in a certain sense, legitimate to the law. And so council officers, when we're in planning, have to just, their hands, rightly so, are tied according to this scheme. And what little subjectivity they have, they try, hopefully, to exercise it in the best interests of the community. So I do feel from the way the report's written that that has been handled in a very even-handed manner, and I'd like to pass on my congratulations to the planning department and the people who were involved. I think it's exciting that we have some employment opportunities down there, and I think that the locals will be, hopefully happy with the outcome. The noise is an issue, will be an issue, because I know that oyster farming can create a bit of a noise, but there are actually some very tight controls around that with 6-monthly acoustic soundings that have to be done. So we will hopefully see a good outcome. Apart from that, I don't think the community will even notice that it's there, in my humble opinion, once it's operating. And I'm going to be supporting this under the advice of the planning scheme and the experts who've provided the report.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? If not, I'll make a few comments just before I ask the Deputy Mayor to sum up. I just wanted to thank the members of the community who took the time to make submissions in relation to this. As we've already noted, we received 45, of which 42 were against this and 3 were in support. And I think, as others have said, it's very difficult for us as the planning authorities. It's one of these issues where in utopia we would be able to assess this based on the will of the community as to whether they want this activity in that area or not. In reality, we have to assess this against the merits of the planning scheme, and that's not a scheme that we have put in. That is a state government creation. And so, as Councillor Antali stated, we've had members of the community who feel that it's not an appropriate area to have this type of activity, and they have provided some feedback to us, and I'm sure all councillors have read that feedback, because some of it was very extensive. And some of the issues that have been raised in that feedback, unfortunately, weren't things that could be that are available to be assessed under the scheme, and therefore have to be put in the pile of, you know, not a consideration under the scheme, so we can't consider that. Others who have talked about things like the traffic issues, a traffic impact statement has been provided, and that shows that it wouldn't have any adverse impact. There were some concerns around about the definitions, like the definition of resource development. We've had this assessed by our qualified planners. They've provided the advice, and the proposal has been essentially, as we do with all development applications, it's been assessed against the requirements of the scheme, and it's met the relevant acceptable standards, or it's adequately addressed the relevant performance criteria, and so it is recommended for approval with conditions. I am satisfied that we have some criteria in the, or some clauses in the permit that would enable a review of the noise emissions to be undertaken at 6 months. So I hope that that's something that gives some comfort to the community. I think I would just like to thank the staff for the work that they have done on this. It's obviously been a very large application to deal with, and like others who have spoken, I'm satisfied with the qualified advice that we're being provided with, and I will be supporting this evening. And I'll just finish my contribution with this warning, is that one of the things that we know as planning authority, that if we disregard the professional advice and the assessment against the planning scheme, then we can find ourselves in the tribunal and costing ratepayers a large sum of money for defending such a refusal if it's not warranted under the scheme, because the proposal
according to the experts, has been accepted as meeting the requirements. So I will be supporting this. Councillor Midgley, did you have a question?
Yes, I have a question. Thank you. I'm just noting one of the representatives asked about if it did get supported, then the 40-kilometre, or if there could be a reduction on the speed limit on Old Station and Ben Bales Road to 40 kilometres. I guess it's a matter separate to this, but I just wanted to raise that one and wondered if so, that could be...
Yeah, so that would be a matter separate to this, as you'd be aware, and there is we do have some information available now on Council's website as to how members of the community can request what the process is for requesting a reduction in speed limits. Ultimately, whilst Council can make recommendations to the Transport Commissioner, it is not something that we're able to mandate, and the Transport Commissioner would have the final say based on the information that they've been provided with about the type of vehicles on a road, about the crash history, number of vehicles, etc. So I'd certainly encourage anybody to have a look at that and commence that process if they'd like to. Are there any further discussions? Councillor Glade-Wright, would you like to sum up? No? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation now. It's moved by Councillor Glade-Wright and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against?
No.
I'm going to ask for a show of hands. All those in favour? Is Councillors Antoli, Fox, Dean, Bain, Richardson, Glade-Wright and Reet, and those against, is Councillors Cordova and Midgley. The motion is carried. The Planning Authority of Council now adjourns and the open session of Council recommences at 6:11 p.m. We are now on page 67, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned and at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. Takes us to page 67 still, delegated authority policy with a recommendation on page 69, looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Glade-Wright, seconded Councillor Midgley. Councillor Glade-Wright.
Thank you. The purpose of this report is to review Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority. My understanding is that LGAT has previously compiled a comprehensive register of all sections of legislation that reference the functions or powers relevant to the Tasmanian councils, and the register...
Sorry, if I could just interrupt. Mr Bush, could you... What is it? Oh, sorry, thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much. Would you like to... Would you mind starting again because that we were just a little distracted? Thank you.
Sure. So we're considering the review of the delegated authority policy. LGAT have compiled a comprehensive register which has recently been updated and that has formed the basis of the review. And it all looks sensible to me and I'm happy to support the recommendation as printed on the screen.
Beg your pardon, Councillor Fox and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I just noticed in the document there are frequent references to the GM and I wondered whether we should change the word GM to CEO.
Good question. So we will need to update that, but there's a process that we have to go through first. We've sought some legal advice in relation to how we change all those references and we'll be following that. So at this stage we don't need to. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple of questions on this one. Largely supportive of the changes, but the first one that really jumps out at me, I'm looking now at page 24 of the Delegated Authority with the track changes, which is on page 94 of our agenda. And where it says that we're changing it to, I'm looking under the conditions or restrictions, and it says subject to more than two opposing representations having been received, and that's a change from no fewer than two. My understanding, so firstly, my question is why the change from no fewer to more than, and I'll just preface that by saying I'm pretty sure that on our council website when we talk about the minimum number of submissions, it says three. So I'm just interested to know why the change.
Could you tell me the page number, please?
94, in the bottom right-hand corner of 94. Has it gone to 95, sorry?
Oh, okay. Page 94, so I'm looking at section 57.6.
Page 95 on the electronic version.
Okay. And and I'll just preface it by saying, sorry, Mayor, that on our Kingbrook Council planning page, it says planning applications need to be presented to the councillors if three or more opposing representations have been received or is for refusal. And so I'm just really interested to know whether, if all this time, it actually was supposed to be two, and we've just been telling people that it was three representations opposing. Or maybe I'm completely misunderstanding.
I'm hoping the General Manager could provide some advice, or Mr. Rosen.
Through you, Mayor. I would just note that this column obviously refers to conditions or restrictions, so it's not necessarily... Obviously, the whole policy is about the statutory powers from the Council to the GM. So this third column isn't necessarily just reliant on what the statutory powers say. So LGAT does provide a comprehensive review a couple of times throughout the year, and I've also undertaken a review. It was in discussion with Scott. It was decided that in terms of trying to make the wording as easy as possible to understand, that was the basis of changing to more than two. So if I'm understanding your question correctly, I don't think anything has changed in that column other than we've just tried to make it easier. So if you're referring to three, then that's more than two. So I'm not sure. I hope that answers what your question is.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Through you, it nearly answers my question. So I think we can all agree that there is in fact a difference between no fewer than two opposing representations, because that means no fewer than two means you only need two opposing representations for a DA to get called before councillors. Now, on our website, and what we've always been telling people in the 5 years I've been here, is that you need three opposing representations before a DA gets clawed before council. So now, here we are updating our delegated authority policy to say, yep, sure enough, it is three representations that you need before a DA comes before council. But it feels a little bit to me like, for years and years and years, we've been telling people you need three representations, when in fact, all of those development applications that only had two opposing representations, according to this section of the policy, they should have been brought before council. Now, there's plenty of DAs that I can think of where that would have made a really big difference. So I'm just really curious about what's happened here.
Mr. Rosen.
Through you, Mayor. So it more than two, again, it's three, so you're correct. It's just I can't say anything more than I'm in agreement with you. I'm a bit confused or missing something as to where we're differing, so it's three. We agree with you with that.
Sorry to interrupt, but it used to say no fewer than two, which is actually two. It used to say no fewer than two, and now it says more than two.
Mr. Basham.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Thank you for that, Councillor. I acknowledge exactly what you're saying. But you are correct. The information that was previously on the eyes on the website being that there's three or more, in order to not provide any confusion, that's why we've made this simplistic change. So now it's extremely clear that there's a requirement for more than two being three and or more. There's a number of ways that we would have been able to word it to be consistent, but we thought this was the most simplest. But I understand where the previous confusion could have existed.
If I can intervene here, because I could actually see Councillor Cordova's point. It was always my understanding that it was three or more that representations that we then considered a development application here. And what the previous wording seems to suggest it was if it was two or above two. And so we've been... So it's either one or the other. So where did the three come from, I guess is the question. We know it's on our website, but I vaguely remember, I mean, this goes back quite a few years, but I vaguely remember when we did introduce this, but I just can't think when. Mr. Basham, are you able to help us, or the Acting General Manager? No, the Acting General Manager is saying no. Mr. Basham.
Through you, Mayor. I don't recall when it was previously introduced. It's in my time here, I always recall it being three or more. And all that I can say in relation to this amendment and Councillor Cordova's comments is that I'm satisfied that this is consistent with the way that we have been operating, and so that that amendment is appropriate associated to the delegated authority.
Thank you. Councillor Fox?
I need to say that Brian Stewart, who was our Director of Planning at the time, was the one who changed it from two to three. I can't remember the exact year he was our Director of Planning, but it has been two and then it was changed to three. So maybe the paperwork hasn't caught up, but I know that it should and is three and has been for at least 20 years.
Is it? I thought I remembered it changing during my time on here, and I've been here 12 years now. Councillor Cordova.
Sorry to follow up on this, Mayor, but doesn't that mean that if you're somebody who had two if you were somebody who made a representation on a development application for which there were only two, and this council didn't sent it to delegated authority and it was passed, doesn't that mean that you have some kind of right to say, hold on, that proposal, according to your own policy, should have come before the councillors, and therefore it hasn't, and therefore there may be hundreds, if not thousands, of maybe only dozens, maybe only a few. But doesn't that mean that there are, over the course of the last 20 years, some people who didn't get the chance to hear their case put forward as a representor among the councillors, doesn't that mean those people missed out?
Mr. Basham.
Through you, Mayor. We may have to take the question on notice to get to look into the background in further detail, but there is, I guess, one point being that the ability for the General Manager or the Planning Authority to refer a permit or otherwise to the Planning Authority or to Council is ultimately discretionary outside of the provisions of the restrictions of the delegated authority.
So that's why there, in the past there have been others where there have been no representations, where we're the applicant, where we've referred it here anyway for the sake of transparency.
Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Cordova.
So I'll try and get through this, and then I've got a very quick... basically, for the record, I like the idea of it being two and then it comes before council, and I also like the idea of a councillor being able to call something in so that, let's say you can see that there's a development application that is going on delegated authority. Is it true that other councils have the capacity to, quote-unquote, call something in where it has to be seen by the councillors rather than going through delegated authority?
I'm not aware of that. I don't know. No, everybody's okay. Shaking their heads.
Everybody's shaking
their heads. Not aware of that.
That's okay. So I think I will actually vote against this delegated authority on the basis that if it used to be two, and it says in the report it was two right up until today when now we're changing it to three officially. I know that in practice we've been doing something that is different from our policy, but I prefer it to be two because I believe that it enfranchises the community more. And so I'm going to be voting against it on that basis. I do have a couple more questions just about other ones that I didn't understand, and I'll be really brief. Just on page 81 of the agenda, it refers to trade secrets, section 23.1.2, trade secrets, page 81 of the agenda, page 11 of the report. And I just wanted to know what's an example of where a trade secret might be an issue?
So I've got the page 81.
It's under Environmental section... Management and Pollution Control Act 1994.
Yep. Section... And which number? Section?
23.1.2.
Okay, so it's page 82.
Through,
Mr. Rosen.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, obviously I haven't having a look at this section, and as you can appreciate, there's a lot of legislative sections, so I'm not on board with everything. But in reading this section, a trade secret would obviously form part of intellectual property, and from a practical point of view, I imagine if an issue arose that caused council to seek legal advice, then it may well be that the legal advice on whatever issue was before the council or before the GM, council, the GM could form the view that in fact the issue was a trade secret. I mean, to properly answer that, I would really need to know, be given a practical example, what a trade secret. But
that's
trade
okay.
secret is, of course, intellectual property, and it would really be a matter of either report or advice going to the GM or to the councils to whether that section needed to be considered.
Sure. Thank you. That's helpful. And that's okay. And I promise I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I was just curious.
Okay.
But there's just one more that I was a little bit worried about, which is on page 84, section 37, 2, 3 and 4. And it says, this is an addition, a new addition. It says, the council to consider and, if accepted, to pay compensation if established that there were insufficient grounds for making an order. So this is at the top of page 84. And basically my question is, how is that different from the status quo? Who decides what the compensation will be? My assumption would be that we're already liable to pay compensation if Rampat or Tascat, if they make a finding against us. So why are we adding this in? And do we have more liability as an organisation now as a result of adding this in than we did before under the status quo?
Mr. Rosen.
Sorry, could you, which page in the...
From page 84, Food Act 2003, the third item down.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Yeah, the question was just if... so now that we're adding in this bit that says we have to pay compensation if it's established that there were insufficient grounds for the council to make an order, and my question is, how's that different from the status quo? Are we giving ourselves more liability as an organisation now by acknowledging that we're going to pay compensation to people when we didn't used to say that?
Through you, Matt. So I think it's important to keep in mind that the clear distinction, that's something that's been enacted throughout the last year. So it's obviously not something that the council's put in. So in terms, again, it would depend on the facts of the case. So that's legislation that needs to be in there. So again, not trying to avoid the question, but council is obliged to consider that those statutory sections if need be. And again, it would be based on what the facts are and then the legal advice and or what the council or the GM thought at the time. So I can't add anything more. I'm not sure whether that really fully answers your question, but it's not everything that's gone in here. All the track changes have been necessary because it's new legislation that's come into force throughout the year.
Sure.
I might be able to be of some assistance there. It relates to the Food Act of 2003. So, for example, if our public health officer issues an order to shut down a cafe or a food truck or something because there's a belief that there is a risk to public health because of the manner in which they're preparing or serving the food, then this is added in so that if there were insufficient grounds for that order to be made, then it means that the owner of that establishment can have recourse to council for compensation. So
right.
It's really
sense.
Putting the onus back on council under the Food Act to be sure that if you're going to serve a business with such a notice that you're doing so on very solid grounds and not, you know, the hearsay of somebody who said I got food poisoning after I went to a place, but that there's evidence of things not being stored properly or whatever.
Sure. Thank you for that, Mayor. I'll conclude my remarks now, if I might, and just to say that I think it's a really comprehensive and largely good document. I am going to vote against it on the basis that I want the record to show that I believe we should have the capacity to have development applications brought before the councillors and not parked with delegated authority on the basis of two representations, as was our policy. I think that enfranchises the community more, gives the community more say in what the development applications going on in their neighbourhood are, and gives them more, it enfranchises them, gives them more capacity to get involved with the planning process. I don't think it's been justified why we need the change to three. I realise that that's been our practice for some time, but I wasn't there when that decision was made to change it from two to three in practice, and I disagree with that decision. I think it should be two, and I think we would be better off if we applied in practice our old policy of having only two. So that's my strong position, and that's why I'll be voting against this. And I really do hope that we can actually review that whole situation to find out what happened, and hopefully to remediate it to the better position that it used to be some decades ago. Thanks very much, Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Mayor. I believe I've spotted a typo. It's at the top of page 86.
Oh, that's exactly the one I was going for.
Sorry,
too.
Mayor. I've robbed you of your joy.
It's supposed to say officer.
That's right. You've took the words right out of my mouth.
Yes. So section 102 on page 86 should say an authorised officer rather than office.
Yes.
Thank you.
And if I may make a small contribution, I'm very happy with three representations and I will be supporting this. The reason why I think two is too low is that we will have way too many unnecessary DAs before us as a result of that. And I think it will clog up the actual process for those individuals. I think two is too low a bar, and I don't want good, well-intentioned individuals out there to be stymied by what I'd call would be lawfare, where two negative responses will instantly slow down the process for an applicant. So I'm quite happy with three, and I'll be voting in favour of this delegated authority policy.
Thank you very much. Councillor Dean.
Thank you. Yeah, just support Councillor Antoli's comments there about it definitely should be three, two is too few, and I don't need to slow down the process at all for applicants. I just wanted to make one other comment, though. As a councillor, it was quite a lengthy report and quite a detailed one. I think just one piece of feedback would have been really great, as we normally have, is a discussion which covers off the key changes to the policy. I note that wasn't really a summary for us. You've got to remember we are a mix. We're not highly trained lawyers, and so that would have been useful for me personally to be able to go that rather than go through every single one. And as we've heard tonight, some very good questions, which we have heard answers to, but in the future that would be really great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It wasn't a question. Any further comments? Councillor Glade-Wright, did you want to sum up? No? I'll put the recommendation then. It's as moved by Councillor Glade-Wright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? No. A show of hands is required. All those in favour? Is Councillors Antoli, Fox, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Glade-Wright and Reet. And those against? Councillor Cordova. The recommendation is... carried. Didn't get the word for a minute there. We're now on page 186, Future of Local Government Review, with a recommendation on page 196. Do I have a mover and a seconder, please? Come on, people, a bit of excitement. Councillor Midgley, is that a
yep,
quest to
that,
move
that's
it?
A light on. Yep.
Thank you, and we've got a seconder in Councillor Glade-Wright. Councillor Midgley.
I have to turn my light on. Sorry, I've got to move it to the next one. That was a long report. Anyway, here we are in a very interesting time as we submit this one, because we don't know what the future will look like anyway. No pun intended there. So thank you very much to the staff for taking the time to present us this submission. It was a really great read, the General Manager, Acting General Manager, for doing that. I personally supported... what was put forward, but I look forward to hearing from my colleagues in regards to what they have said. Just for the community, in the discussion it talks about the board commence a future of local government review in January 2022. Council's been kept up to date with that. Many of us have attended different workshops and discussions in regards to that. The 4.3 council submission expressed a desire to collaborate with Huon Valley to further investigate Southern Shore Scenario 2 that combines the existing Kingborough and Huon Valley Council areas to create one new council south of Hobart. And in our submission also, we suggest that the investigation scenario should also involve consideration of the potential addition of Taruna to our capital city and a Bruny Island board alternative scenario. So the board considered the submissions and the option paper released in 2023, and the final report includes an integrated package of 37 reforms and implementation plan for the next few years. The board has recommended that a former council amalgamation proposal should be developed for Kingborough and Huon Valley councils. The recommendation is for a whole area of each council and contains no mention of Taruna, a potential loss, and so we've stated the potential loss of Taruna would erode Kingborough's population base or emerge Kingborough and Huon Valley by approximately 3,400 residents and reduce annual revenue by approximately 2.9 million. So in keeping with Council's long-held view on reform, it is suggested that Council should support the Board's recommendations that a formal Council amalgamation proposal should be developed for the existing whole areas of Kingborough and Huon Valley councils. So I look forward to what other comments have by other councillors around the table.
Thank you, Councillor Benchley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm generally in support of the concept of both talking to the Huon Valley, but I don't think they're in supportive of talking to us. I have concerns on page 189, though, where there is a suggestion that people who are eligible to stand for election to council have to undertake 6 months prior to nomination, have to undertake a prescribed mandatory education session to ensure all candidates understand the role of councillors and their responsibilities. I think that's a really great way of discouraging people from standing from local government, especially if they're not members of parties. And I also think it's not practical, and particularly if there's a by-election or a person resigns, how can anybody have 6 months in order to do that mandatory education session before the election, which would mean that position would be vacant for 6 months and more? So I just think it's impractical and quite onerous and not necessary. In fact, I also feel that the educational program that they're asking councillors to undertake once they are elected is discriminatory against councils. Why don't federal and state politicians have the same educational program when they deal with a lot more money than we do? And I think it's also the programs that have been provided to us for education have been very difficult to navigate, digitally clumsy, and I think they also discriminate against older councillors and sitting councillors. So I'm very concerned about items 15 and 16 on page 189 on this report. But apart from that, I think hopefully my comments will be considered when Council puts in the submission. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Just to address the concerns you've raised around that, it's not suggesting like a six-month course. What this recommendation, which is number 15, for those who are searching for it, is saying that anybody who is seeking election to local government has to attend a one-off session which outlines what the roles and responsibilities of a councillor are. And that has actually come from feedback from a lot of councillors themselves, as well as members of the community. And so during the consultation phases, some councillors who perhaps were standing on, say, ran for council on a single issue, didn't understand what their role was and what their how they had to work within the council. And so this is really trying to ensure that everyone goes into it with their eyes open, has an opportunity to learn, this is what your responsibilities are. Your responsibilities are to come to a council meeting, to come to every council meeting and as many workshops as you possibly can, to represent your community in this way, to, you know, fully read your papers ahead of coming to a council meeting. It's really the basics that you would hope that everybody would know before they decide to stand for elected office,
whether, you know, that be here or at other levels of government, but you can't make that assumption. And so there have been people who, in my understanding from the what the review threw up was that councillors were saying, I had no idea that this is what this meant. I had some people, I believe one person said, I didn't even know that I was elected for a four-year term. So it's really about ensuring that people take seriously when they do throw their hat in the ring, because we know it's time-consuming and it's expensive to run for election, and it's a reality check. You know, it's not trying to discourage anyone. It's really just trying to make sure they're fully informed. So hopefully that's given you some comfort as to why it is in there. I had Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I do actually sympathise with what Councillor Fox said. I do think that the training that we receive, while the content is excellent, the presentation is quite clunky. I don't consider myself an older individual, and I'm still finding it a bit sort of cumbersome to get through. However, that's another matter. I think the education comments you made are excellent, and I agree. I would have loved, not that I have any regrets whatsoever, but I would have loved to have gone through the education process beforehand. And if it does cause people to pull out, then good. Because if they're not up for it, they shouldn't be running, you know. So I'm happy to support this. My comment about amalgamation is I do think there is a natural amalgamation between the Huon Valley and Kingbra. I know that a lot of people in the Huon Valley do not sympathise with that point of view. At this stage, I wouldn't be, not that we are proposing anything forced, but I would think it's problematic for the next state government, whoever they may be, to force amalgamations unless they could demonstrably show that it is within the net benefit of both communities in doing so, and that would be tough, because there'd be a lot of people opposing that, but that would be the only situation I'd be comfortable with, a forced amalgamation. But I'll be supporting this proposal because this is what we have agreed as a council, and I don't see anything irregular in it through multiple workshops and discussions.
Thank you very much. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. My first question is Huon Valley Council embarking on a similar process of a formal amalgamation proposal? Like, are they doing the homework that that our council is being asked to do by endorsing this proposal tonight? Does anyone know?
I'm not aware of what. Look, in terms of the Huon Valley Council, on the 14th of December last year, a motion was passed by their council to engage in discussions. They wanted to get... My understanding of the motion is that they wanted to get all councillors from the Derwent Valley, Kingbra and Huon Valley together in a room to discuss potential amalgamations, which is not an option that was in the local government review board's paper. Even though they passed that motion on the 14th of December, we have not had an approach formally or even informally from the Huon Valley Council to initiate those discussions. So there has been some discussion on social media that we're unwilling to meet. I have to say that I don't think that having around 30 people in a room trying to discuss potential amalgamations is necessarily going to be productive. We all know the more people you get in a meeting, the worse that it can become, and it can become a talk fest. I would have thought the appropriate way to proceed with that would be to invite the mayors and the deputy mayors of each of those three councils to have an initial discussion. But certainly it would be pretty unwieldy to try and have 30 people discussing a proposal which is not on the table from the Local Government Review Board. But we need to put that aside, because what we've got here tonight is we're being asked to respond to what the Local Government Review Board has put out. So hopefully that's of some assistance.
Thank you, Mayor. My second question is, it says on page 194 that at 7.1, the future of local government review has already, quote, involved an extensive community consultation process, and this is planned to continue, end quote, and that's very welcome from my perspective. But my question is about Taroona and Bruni specifically. If indeed extensive community consultation has taken place on at Taroona and on Bruni, do we have a very clear sense then
about what the wishes of the residents on at Taruna and on Bruni are with respect to a potential amalgamation or boundary adjustment?
So the consultation that's referring to is the consultation not undertaken by us, but undertaken by the review board. So there weren't... Look, I don't think there was an overwhelming number of submissions from individuals that the that responded to the invitation to have part of the discussion. I know that there were, during the public hearings, there were some members of the Bruni Island community, I believe, may have made a submission during the a session that was down at the hub. But there hasn't been a lot of engagement by the general community about this, despite local government reform being a significant issue and one that, as the closest level of government to people, that you would think that they would engage with. But, you know, and that was despite, I think, the review board having a very good engagement process. They had stalls in Channel Court and various areas around our municipality and other parts of the state. They ran a number of sessions that the community could drop into. So it's been a very, very thorough process over the last just over 2 years. But for whatever reason, the community hasn't engaged with it. So that has been, I guess, a little bit of a challenge.
Thank you, ma'am. And it is indeed my position that it would be great to have a clear sense of what Taruna and Bruni think of this, because it clearly affects them, but it also affects us as a municipality. So it's really important. I think, look, I'll start my contribution now, if I may, that the momentum for these local government reforms has slowed down, I think it's fair to say. They are the result of a particular political party in government who, now that a state election is called, I think there have been some changes of heart. Voluntary amalgamations are one thing, where there is adequate community consultation, but mandatory boundary adjustments are quite another. So I support where in the report it basically says that you know, we support voluntary things, but we don't support mandating things. But I'm really concerned about the message this sends to the residents of Bruni Island and Taruna, that we're actively seeking arrangements, formal arrangements, prior to extensive community consultation with the people who are actively affected. And also, I really think that fundamentally, our organisation is about service delivery. It's not about cutting costs or cutting corners. It's about delivering the very best service to the people of Kingborough and keeping Kingborough residents at the heart of everything we do. Now, I've always maintained that this whole notion of mandatory boundary adjustments or the amalgamations, it's going to work where the councils are already sharing services, where they're small, where there's reasons to do it, and where people are fundamentally on board. Maybe that's true for Kingborough. Maybe that's true for Huon Valley. It hasn't yet been demonstrated to me. But the idea that... Really, if we're to improve local government and its efficiency and its ability to provide service to the community, it's the financial assistance that council receives by way of general purpose financial grants to local government from the Commonwealth. These financial assistance grants that have been gutted over time. Financial assistance from the federal government around the nation to local governments has been gutted over time, and that's what I lament, and that's what I think we should be campaigning for, rather than focusing on this old state government's pet project. I lament the reduction in Commonwealth and state government assistance per capita to local residents over time. And rather than doing more with less, local government in Tasmania should have access to increasing financial support from the other tiers of government. And yet all we ever talk about is council amalgamations. Rather than talking about the fact that councils need to be better resourced by other tiers of government through the State Grants Commission and the federal assistance grants, you know, that was hardly mentioned in those options papers from the local government review, and yet here we are proposing that we're going to do a formal amalgamation process, when in fact I just don't think that we need to. I mean, if it were true that it was such a good idea to reduce the number of councils and to amalgamate with Huon Valley, why then in 1907, when Tasmania reduced its 149 municipalities by mergers and amalgamations down to 53, why then was there not a great reduction in rates and improvement in service delivery? Then again in 1993, when we went from 46 local government areas down to 29 local government areas, why, if it was such a great idea to amalgamate our way out of problems, why then did rates didn't drop and service delivery didn't improve? When all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, and this perennial discussion about council amalgamations is very naive to the fact that there's other things that councils can do to improve service delivery and improve their efficiency. And it doesn't always and everywhere have to relate to council amalgamations. Now, maybe they're a great idea, in which case, let Huon Valley invest their time and resources into preparing formal proposals for amalgamation. I don't see why we need to invest our time and resources when we're already overworked and understaffed, in my humble opinion. If council amalgamations really worked, then in Victoria they wouldn't be trying to reverse them in various areas. If council amalgamations always and everywhere worked, then you wouldn't get the example of Gundagai and Cootamundra councils, which were forced to amalgamate, and one of the councillors there on the TV show The Project in January 2002 said that rates increased by 53.5%, water and sewage increases by 30%, and other fees and charges increased by 15%. So the case for these boundary adjustments really needs to be made in terms of the financial outcomes, the societal outcomes, the economic and social and good governance outcomes. It hasn't been described to me that it will be this great panacea, and yet we continually talk about it as though it's going to be the great silver bullet for councils. And the reason for that is that there's a political agenda at play where people think it's a great talking point and it gets lots of clicks on the Mercury, but it doesn't actually solve the problem. And yet, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And that's why here we are yet again talking about formal council amalgamations rather than talking about business continuity and business improvement plans for this council. So I would set aside our investment in this this fanciful thing about Huon Valley and Taroona and Bruni and Kingborough. I would put that aside and start focusing on what we can do as a service delivery organisation to improve outcomes. And then if Huon Valley wants to talk about it, or if the state government wants to talk about it, let them talk about it. But I don't think we should be redirecting resources towards it. And that's why I'll be voting against. Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Dean.
Look, can I just clarify one thing? Taroona is now off the table.
Yep.
So that speech then...
And so is Bruny Island.
So it's off the table.
So is Bruny Island.
Yeah.
So we need to be focusing on the 37 recommendations that are here.
Yeah. I just wanted to clear that up because I got a bit confused during that talk then. Taroona is definitely on the table. Bruny is definitely off the table as well. Okay, that's good. Another point that I just wanted to seek clarification on, is it our position and the board's position that absolutely no amalgamation will proceed unless there is an elector poll of both, or let's say three, councils that is in support of any amalgamation? So nothing will happen unless that takes place first.
So that is that's my understanding of the recommendation of the review board, and then the state government has indicated that, of course, the current state government has indicated that they will not seek to have forced amalgamations, because there are a number of councils at the moment, particularly in the northwest, who are actively having discussions and quite willingly, and that's terrific. But that is the case.
And then just the one you've kind of already touched on it. I have to say I'm a little bit confused about the whole Huon Valley Kingborough situation. You've pointed out, after I asked perchance because I'd heard about those discussions that they were progressing in the northwest, and it seems like they're really keen to make it happen. So I asked for an update in our last meeting, and since then, when I asked that, the response from the mayor was particularly around. I got the impression, and I've already heard two comments from our councillors, that the Huon Valley don't seem too open to the idea, and it seems that message has come through. Yet there is a formal position from them from December, so not that long ago, saying that they do want to meet with us and they do want to meet with the Derwent Valley. So I'm just really trying to get to the bottom of it. We've also heard that, one, that they're not really keen on talking to us, they haven't reached out to us, yet there is a formal position of them wanting to. Obviously, that was only a few months ago. I'm really confused by it. We're all of the impression that Huon Valley doesn't want to deal with us, but then on paper, as a council-endorsed position, unanimously endorsed, they do. So I'm just, what's going on?
Look, I am as confused as you are. I have sat in the hearings where the Deputy Mayor and I attended and gave a presentation to the review board where we put Kingborough's case that we believe there was a good opportunity to redraw the boundaries to incorporate the two of our municipalities of Kingborough and Huon Valley, and outlined our reasons.
Our presentation was then followed by the Mayor of Huon Valley, who took the opportunity to say no, they didn't want to amalgamate with Kingborough. And likewise, I think there were a couple of Huon Valley residents who took the opportunity in the public submissions to also reiterate that. So, yes, the motion on the 14th of December that the Huon Valley Council passed was a surprise to us. And as I said earlier, it has not been actioned by them to date. So your guess is probably as good as mine.
So we were aware a few weeks ago that, I mean, it was just December. So the discussions that you're saying that the Mayor of the Huon Valley had with the board was, I'm guessing, previous to the formal position that they adopted.
Yeah, it was in about September, I think, last year that we went and gave that presentation.
So she maybe was speaking out of turn because they've obviously now come to an agreement that...
Well, that was a formal position of, you know, just as we brought a formal position to council to take to... previous to the board. I imagine every council would have had to have taken a formal position to their council and then make a submission to the board. So we had two different processes. So this is the second part. So the first part was councils all had to respond to the draft report put out by the review board and put out, you know, into the initial sort of, you know, here's some proposed models, here's what we're looking at. We're asked to do that. Then they've brought down their 37 recommendations that are here, and the state government has said, we want to know now what all councils want. So now this is us responding to the state government.
Okay, but we've still got a position from them that they're happy to speak to us, and we've got a position that, as you pointed out, is favourable towards pursuing the potential amalgamation. Mm. So we've got two entities that seem to want to work together, and I'm hearing that we've not heard anything from them. So I'm just wondering, I mean, I haven't said anything come in, I'm just a mere councillor, so I've not had anything come in my inbox as to inviting from the Mayor of Huon Valley, I understand, but I'm just a councillor. So have we reached out to them? I mean...
Well, it's their notice of motion to action in the way that they would like to. And as I indicated, I don't know that it's particularly valuable to try and have around 30 people in a room trying to work out a position when I've been in a room with a number of their councillors who have made it very clear that they feel that it's totally wrong to try and amalgamate the two. So I think what you're going to get is a talk fest. I think it would be far more appropriate to have two representatives from each of the councils, or three, and have, you know, nine people and try and work out if there's any common ground. But it's, as I said, this is out of our hands. It's their motion for them to action. I would not be expecting a motion on our books that mentioned Huon Valley for them to action it without us doing so when it's ours. So I am lobbing the ball firmly back in their court if they would like to proceed with actioning their motion.
Well, I guess I'm trying to get at is if we are open to it, if that's our position, why don't we just go to them?
I'm not going to action their motion for
them. I'm not
them.
Talking about their motion. Okay. And there's nothing to do with their motion.
Okay.
We have since July, I think it was, when we first... If we've been at the position that we're supportive of pursuing a potential amalgamation with the Huon Valley... Why, we've discussed this previous a few times, that we are happy to do that. Why don't we go and make a formal invite? Nothing to do with their motion. If we want to see it, why wouldn't we start beginning those conversations?
We have done that in the past, and I can't remember the exact date. It was around the middle of last year, probably around the time that we did make a decision that we did support changing the boundaries between us and Huon Valley, and the Deputy Mayor was there with me, and the Acting General Manager, and we had the General Manager and the Mayor of the Huon Valley come to see us, and we had about an hour's meeting, and we ran through a number of issues. They talked through their... they highlighted for us some of the challenges that they have in relation to the number of bridges and kilometres of unsealed roads and jetties. It was a very interesting conversation. I've got the wrong notebook here, so I don't have any notes from it available to me at the moment, but they made it very clear at that meeting that they did not wish to amalgamate with us. I'm happy for the Deputy Mayor to provide some additional commentary, but I don't think that the three of us from Kingborough who were in that meeting felt that the door was ajar. It seemed to be very much shut at that point.
Yeah, look, I'd just say that I'm, baffled by the situation. It seems they're keen. It seems we are, and we just like this hard-to-get situation. Based on one meeting back in July, there's been a lengthy period now of 7 months. So just last question then. In terms of the process now, we will, I assume there will be a majority support for this. We will submit this. And obviously, we're the only proposition is the Huon Valley merger. What might we do? Are we just going to wait for the response from the board, or will we be proactive?
It's up to the government now. So that's why I'm trying to clarify the process with you. It's not a response from the board. The board has finished their work. They've made the recommendations to government. The problem we've got now is that the current government asked for the feedback from all councils by the 29th of February, so that it's good that they're continuing that process, so we need to get this in. But given we're in election period now, we're in the great unknown in terms of what happens, in terms of who is in government after the 23rd of March and what they seek to do with the whole entire process. And I say very clearly, I really hope that this work is not thrown out, because it was a two-year investment of resources, but also a lot of valuable work about what are the key issues in local government. And I'd put aside the amalgamation stuff, because it's almost like that's the headline-grabbing piece of it, when there are 36 other recommendations that actually get to some of the fundamental issues of how local government operates in the current climate. Things like workforce shortages and resource sharing and not having the same systems across all councils, so that when staff move it's difficult, but also, you know, our systems can't talk to one another and you can't get efficiencies of scale and a whole range of things. And I think one of the things that I think is very important and that ELGAT have put up to the parties now that the election has been called is to have a state and local government charter, so that there is some, that is one of the recommendations in here, and that's something that ELGAT are taking out in the election and asking parties and candidates to commit to, so that there's a clear understanding of how state government engages with local government in terms of sometimes there are decisions and policies made by state government that impact local government that we've never asked about. We have no input into. We're just then asked to implement them. So, that's the process going forward. It's a bit of an unknown, and I know that there have been the Labor Party, for example, haven't wanted to support the local government review up until now. I don't know what their current position is on it. And I would certainly say this has been a very, very big project, and I think there's been some valuable work come out of it, so please don't throw it out. Does that help, Councillor Neame?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, thank you.
I feel like I bored you then. Would you like to turn off your light then?
Oh, I didn't realise that. Sorry.
I had Councillor Glade right there. Next, she had a light on, and then Councillor Bain.
Just really quickly, I must admit, I don't really feel like I've spoken to many people in the community about amalgamation, and I know we can't do a plebiscite, but I like this idea of surveying the community. Would we ever consider maybe doing a survey which goes out with the rates notice, with a little bit of information for and against, just so that we feel confident that we really know what our community want?
I think that time has passed. I think if we were going to do that, that would have been when we were initially formulating our response to, you know, back in sort of the middle of last year. And the one that comes to mind is always the elector poll that the Tasman Council did. So many, many years ago, there was talk of Tasman merging with Sorell. They did a formal elector poll. I will say elector polls are very costly because it's a process run by the electoral office, so it's like the cost of an election. But that, because of the discussions that were underway at the time when that occurred, that gave them the basis then to say, you know, Tasman residents did not want an amalgamation. But as has already been discussed tonight, one of the recommendations in here is that there be an elector poll if the government was to decide that, you know, there was... If Huon Valley did change their view and say to us they're open to, you know, yes, they would like to... If we had some discussions and they said we would like to merge and we said, yes, we'd like to merge, then that would trigger an elector poll and our community would then have the opportunity to say yes or no. So there could be a trigger in the future. Without my crystal ball, though, and with an educated guess, I'd say it's probably unlikely. But that would also be the proposal then for the ones in the, so Circular Head and Waratah Wynyard are in active discussions. So once they both come to an agreement and go to a future government and say, yes, we are both in agreement, then they would trigger an elector poll. Yeah. Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll try and keep it brief. Just firstly, I think there's some great ideas here, and as you've said, I think it's not just about the amalgamation. There's so many other great initiatives here which would be great to see progressed. Hats off to the Acting General Manager because he's gone through all of these and not just said supported, but in some cases said, this is a great idea, but you need to think about this. So I think he's covered off everything really well. And as is, I think, been spoken about, the number 7 is the one that I really take comfort as far as the amalgamation goes, and that says that in those areas where amalgamation proposals are being developed, a community vote should be held before any reform proceeds to consider an integrated package of reform that involves both the formal council amalgamation proposal and a funded package of opportunities to improve community outcomes. So everyone's going to have their say,
yeah,
and it's going to come with a funded package of opportunities. So I think everyone should take some comfort from that, knowing it's not just going to happen like that. It's going to be a lot of consultation and people agreeing first. So fully support this report.
Thank you, Councillor Bain. You have summed that up very well. Councillor Cordova, with a question?
Thanks for the question. Thank you, Mayor. My question was, did we ever consider just providing the submission, generally in accordance with the comments as outlined in the report, just considering Clause A, but did we ever consider not including B? My question is, why is B an essential part of this proposal? Yep.
The Acting General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. Councillor Cordova, as the author of the report, I thought that it would be discourteous, at the least, not to include as part of my report and recommendation the next step with Huon Valley Council.
But can I just reiterate, that's different from the December motion, which is about Huon, Derwent Valley and Kingborough, which is their motion to deal with. Councillor Antoli.
Is it fair, Mayor, to say that B is an accurate reflection of Council's wishes and discussions, so therefore it should be included? Isn't that not correct? Isn't that what the
yes.
General Manager was essentially
yep.
just doing?
Yep.
Yeah.
Any further contributions? Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up?
Just thanks, everyone, for their contribution. And the General Manager, again, Councillor Bain summed that up in regards to the response and comments. And thank you, Mayor, for answering thoroughly everybody's questions and concerns. I do hear those concerns of that forced amalgamation, but we know there is a process. We know there can be a trigger for an elector poll, and there are points that, you know, it won't just happen, but we are in this very unknown, and I also hope that the government, the new government, doesn't lose all of this hard work, lots of money and cost to the taxpayer, that it is put somewhere, and that there can be further discussion in the future in regards to what we can do, because as the Mayor said, there's great points around the resource sharing, local government charter, and points like that as well that we really shouldn't lose.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'm going to put the recommendation as printed on the screen. It's moved by Councillor Midgley, seconded by Councillor Glaidwright. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Aye. Show of hands is required. All those in favour is Councillors Antoli, Fox, Dean, Bain, Midgley, Richardson, Glaidwright and Reet. Those against is Councillor Cordova. The motion is carried. That takes us now to page 197, Nomination for Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee, with the recommendation on page 198, looking for a mover, which I've got in Councillor Fox, and a seconder in Councillor Glaidwright. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that there was a late submission for the nomination form for the Kingaroo Disability Inclusion and Access Advisory Committee, and looking at the references and the background to this particular individual, I think she would make an excellent representative on the committee, and I endorse the appointment of Mary Cook. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further discussion? I'll just add to that, Councillor Fox, I was really pleased to see we did have the first meeting last week of the new committee with the three additional members that we endorsed at our last meeting, and we're really delighted to see this nomination come in because we currently don't have somebody on the committee who is vision impaired. And we have had quite a discussion about issues such as signage and tactile markers and rights of service animals and so on. So we're really pleased that we've received this nomination, and likewise I fully support it. If there are no other speakers, then I will, Councillor Fox, I'm assuming you don't want to sum up. Thank you. Then I'll put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Glaidwright. All those in favour? I thought you said no for a minute there. The motion is carried unanimously. Comes to financial report with a recommendation on page 202. Looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Do I have a mover in Councillor Bain and a seconder in Councillor Midgley? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. So the report before us is for the January 2024 financial report. The forecast result for 23-24 is now showing an underlying deficit of $2.28 million, which is due primarily to the $1.57 million depreciation that we were aware of from last month to do with the impacts of infrastructure asset revaluations and indexations. The remaining $725,000 that's been added this month is primarily relates to variances in materials and services expenses. So I guess, would it be possible to get a bit of a rundown on the 725, and particularly, I guess, how it's gone from being forecast as a zero to 725 this month, which is quite a big jump?
Mr. Spinks.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, through you. So, as the report says, the dot points are halfway down the page. So materials and services are a bit of an amalgam of many, many things. There's a number of areas of the council that are both favourable and unfavourable. So they include building maintenance, turf maintenance, recreation and reserves. But the forecast adjustment, 725, relates entirely to the transport budget, so primarily road maintenance. That's tracking over budget so far, and has been for a number of months, which we've mentioned in the reports since October report, which was tabled in November. And the reason for that, and it's a shame Mr. Reeve isn't here, he could speak to it better than I could, but the primary reason is that additional road maintenance has been undertaken, and that's sort of brought with it traffic management costs, which are expensive. We primarily use contractors. I know he's got some plans in place to try and draw that variance back a fraction, if he can. But at this point in time, the forecast is for that transport budget to remain over budget, hence why the revision's been put forward.
Councillor Bain, any further questions?
No, thank you, Mayor.
Any other contributions? No. I will put the recommendation as moved by Councillor Bain, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to 16.5 appendices. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Dean and a seconder in Councillor Cordova. Any questions on the appendices? Councillor Dean.
I actually had one, but the Manager of Development Services isn't here, so I'm not really sure. But 3.5 of the quarterly services report talks about tiny homes, so I was just wondering if the Director of Environment and Development and Community might be able just to speak to that. I've realised that that's a big ask, but there's obviously been some news around that, so how that might apply here in Kimbra. That's what I'd be after.
Mr. Cootie.
Through you, Mayor. Are you able to tell me what page you are referring to?
Thanks.
Oh, that was the further information from CBOS, wasn't it? Yeah. 234?
Yeah. 3.5.
I'm sorry, I'm going to have to take that on notice. I actually can't find it.
236 on the electronic copy at item 3.5. It was that CBOS has released a regulatory note on tiny houses that provides guidance on the building and plumbing regulatory requirements for the use of those buildings and for the use of road registerable vehicles on land for the purpose of accommodation.
Yes, it's something that's come to the attention of our department and we're looking at it. And I will have to provide further details next time and perhaps we can send a communication out to councillors around how we're considering that.
Thank you.
Any further discussions? Can I just add that, I meant to do this at the start. There is in the spreadsheet of councillor attendance at meetings to December 2023, there's an error on the spreadsheet and that Councillor Fox attended the audit panel meeting on the 13th of October. So we will be correcting that in the spreadsheet to indicate that she was in attendance. So my apologies, Councillor Fox. Any further questions? No? Okay, I will put the recommendation that the appendices attached to the agenda be received and noted. Moved by Councillor Dean, seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 223, notice the motion of which there were none. And now confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session, confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence and rates delegated authority October to December 2023. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried. So that means we've come to the end of the open session of the council meeting. So thank you very much to those members of the community who were here with us this evening and also to those people who are watching along at home on YouTube. So in accordance with Kingborough Council's meetings, audio recording guidelines policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of council adjourned at 7:17 p.m.